Hello and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. This week, our guest is the Democratic congressional candidate for the 17th District of New York, Kate Conley. Remember, we love taking your questions, so write to politicswarroom@gmail.com for next week's show. That we're going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you are from. You can also get text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. Tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Superpower, 3-Day Blinds, Smalls, and Mint Mobile in our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting these sponsors. It really helps make this podcast happen. Hey, James, on the midterm elections, we agree that if it's not sabotage, it's going to be a big year for Democrats. You think maybe even a little bit bigger than I do. But in the next month, two critical Democratic Senate contests. Maine, in 40 days, picks a nominee to replace the disgraced Graham Platner, who had to resign to run against Susan Collins. And then in less than 3 weeks, Michigan will decide between a very articulate and very left-wing candidate, Dr. El Said, and a very moderate but unexciting candidate, Haley Stevens, Congresswoman. One poll shows Stevens, now that another moderate, Mallory McMurray, has dropped out, shows Stevens ahead. I'm not sure that's the case. I think it's a close race. James, Republicans have a strong candidate in that state, and Mike Rogers. The Democrats can win the Senate while losing in Maine and Michigan, but wow, it's uphill. And I got to tell you, I'm worried about both.
I'm not very worried about Maine at all. Anybody that we nominate, I think, is going to beat her. I just think her expiration date is gone. In terms of Michigan, it's going to be a very interesting primary. And I think if Stephen wins, it will largely be attributable to the black vote. I don't think that the black voters, but, you know, and say most of them in the Detroit metro area, I don't think they feel solidarity with the Palestinian community. I don't, but we'll have to see, because that's going to be, there's no doubt that I'll say he's going to rack up some big numbers in Dearborn and places like that. And I think the fate of that is going to largely be determined by turnout, and particularly Wayne County. But we'll see, and that'll give us a good idea of where the Democratic Party is going forward from here. So it's a pretty telling primary. It really is.
It really is.
And there's some belief that maybe Al Said might have peaked too early. I have no idea.
Well, I agree with you. As I said, Mike Rogers, very conservative, or conservative, not very conservative. He's a formidable opponent, and it was a better Republican year than this year is going to be, no question about it. But Alyssa Slotkin is a really good candidate, and she barely beat him. I think no one would call Stevens a really good candidate, maybe acceptable.
I think you overestimate Rogers. I think Rogers has a lot of issues with the pharmaceutical industry. And I think that's going to be really front and center. And that's going to be that's a voting issue in Michigan. I mean, a real voting issue. And if whoever runs against him, I think he's going to get roughed up pretty good. And I think his ties to the pharmaceutical industry are pretty deep.
Well, I'll tell you one gift that keeps giving, and that's Donald Trump. On the Iran war, he can't decide whether he wants to get out or double down, so he tried to do both. It just shows what a totally chaotic, really reckless engagement this has been. I mean, one day this week, he blasted the Iranians for violating international law by charging a toll for the passage of the Straits of Hormuz. Then this week, Trump says he's going to take over the Straits and he's going to charge a toll. Back down the next day. It's no surprise. He could care less about international law. He doesn't care about the law at home. But it underscores how bad this is. And, you know, this isn't going away, James. There's no easy exit policy for him right now. And people were Republicans were excited about a good inflation report, that's because that was last month when gas prices were down. This is a he's going to wreak havoc with this.
Well, inflation, when they were bragging, was 3.5% when Biden left office. It was 3%. So, I mean, that's sorry, but be that as it may, what we should do in Iran is just leave. Our ships are totally over-deployed, over-taxed. I'm reading the former Secretary of Navy that was served early in the Trump administration, some billionaire, talking about the Navy needs to build more ships. Well, I mean, the Navy's answer to everything is build more ships. Maybe we ought to wisely deploy the ships that we have and put them in places where there's a real ongoing threat that's going on. Say, like, say, oh, this is the Taiwan Strait, just for the fun of it, or maybe the Baltic, okay? But I don't see any way out of this other than just getting out. And, yeah, it's going to be embarrassing. It's going to be all fought for nothing. But, you know, when you make a bad decision, the smart move is to not repeat, keep repeating the bad decision. And he made an awful decision, and let him live with the consequences, not the rest of the country and the rest of the world.
Yeah. Well, he's got to get out.
Yeah, just to sleep. Just fuck, go.
Yeah. James, let's talk just a minute about Lindsey Graham. He died of a massive heart attack. He was a character, somewhat controversial, different stages of his life. I first met him right after he won the House seat in 1994, and I thought he was different than most Southern Republicans back then, 30-some years ago, young, kind of funny. He voted to impeach Bill Clinton in 1998, and I asked him why. He didn't give a very convincing answer, and I had a good source down in South Carolina, and she told me, well, it's easy why. He's already running for Strom's seat in 2002, which, of course, he did and won. And later with John McCain, he was a strong advocate for U.S. engagement and human rights. Always there was the humor. I was the chair of the John F. Kennedy Profile and Courage Committee, and there were vacancies, and Caroline Kennedy told me to get someone smart and fun. And I chose Lindsey, and he more than met those. This was 15 years ago. Then as McCain was dying, he turned to a new leader, a new guru, because he always wanted to be a player, and that was Donald Trump. And I think his influence was exaggerated, but he was a very constructive force on Ukraine and a very, very bad influence on the war in Iran, and actually on policy towards Israel. He got a great send-off, which he would have loved, even though I think his influence was exaggerated, and having his sister, who he raised after their parents died, temporarily fill his seat would have made him happy. And I just think Lindsey Graham was a force in American politics for 30 some years. And like most people, if you get too close to Trump, you get soiled.
Well, he voted for impeachment. No, a little bit more than that. Let's give him all the credit in the world. He was one of the impeachment managers. Remember the great moral titan Henry Hyde and that whole crowd. And he was a little bit more than just for impeachment. He was the most aggressive. I knew him. He could be personable, but I don't think the man has had a. Sorry, I don't want anybody to get sick or die. That's not it. I think his political career is mostly defined by duplicity. That's my own view.
Well, I'm a little higher than that, but in any event, let me raise one more issue, and that's the attack against the press from this administration. It's gone to new levels. There have been attacks before. Other administrations, including Democratic administrations, have subpoenaed reporters and tried to force them to reveal sources. But this administration, a month or so ago, one night they stormed in, I'm using that term, to a Washington Post reporter's house, took her computer, her desktop, took her laptop, took her phone, took her watch to try to find out who her sources were on stories, James, that were not national security or domestic. They were embarrassing. And this week, last weekend, they did the same thing with four New York Times reporters going into their house and giving them subpoenas to testify in New York about their story on why Trump's new airplane, a gift from Qatar, isn't sufficiently secure. He couldn't fly it back from Ankara. He had to get in another plane. This is a plane we spent hundreds of millions of dollars on. He's very proud of, and it isn't up to snuff right now. And he lied about it. That's a story the public should know. And that's a story that they're trying to hide and trying to cover up. And they had Kash Patel, the worst FBI chief maybe in history, is now in charge of this. But this is a larger issue. They really are going, and they're going to try to either get the David Ellisons, their friends, to own the press, and those ones that they don't own, they're going to try to suppress. And it's worse than anything I've seen in, you know, 60 years in this business.
So there's a saying among lawyers, if the facts on your side, pound the facts. If the law's on your side, pound the law. If neither, pound the table. Okay, so
right.
if you got terrible results on domestic policy, you got catastrophic results on foreign policy. It's simple. The move is every time attack the press. It's not my fault. It's their fault.
Right.
And this is the oldest play in the Republican playbook. It is completely unsurprising that they did this. And this is just the way that we're going to be faced with. I don't think, you know, until maybe the first quarter of next year when he just quits and resigns, because that's, in my opinion, I continue to believe that's exactly what he's going to do. And the one thing to point out, and, you know, his big tomorrow, he never, ever, ever talks about people. He talks about him and more him, and how unfair the world has been to him, or how he won the 2020 election and everything else. And I, as you know, I think that AOC is smart. But her idea that, the network shouldn't cover him. They ought to be blanket coverage. It ought to be like the combination of the World Cup, the Super Bowl, the World Series, the Final Four, to everything else. I think everybody needs to see how little this guy gives a crap about the American people. And they're going to see that in demonstratively on tomorrow night.
I agree. James, you know, there's no one House or Senate race that's going to decide the midterms outcome. But there is no bigger House race than in the New York suburbs, 17th District, with one of the most formidable incumbents, Mike Lawler, running against what the Democrats say is maybe their very best challenger, Kate Conley. She is a West Point graduate, finishing in the top 2% of the class. Served 16 years, 6 tours of duty as a special operations commander in Afghanistan and Iraq, and then was a top cybersecurity official. Welcome, Kate Conley. It's terrific to have you on.
Jens, thanks for having me.
The cost of living is a huge issue in your district and elsewhere. This week, it was reported the pace of inflation slowed, and President Trump and some Republicans are saying, this shows we've turned the corner. What do you think?
I'll tell you the stories that I am hearing every single day on the campaign trail in every corner of this district is that working people are struggling even more today than they did before Trump took office. And what they see playing out is corruption and greed driving American policy and decisions in D.C. and not the best interest of them and their families. And they're sick of it. The reality is you've got folks who are working full-time jobs that still can't make enough money to put food on the table, keep a roof over their heads, or afford health care. And that's wrong. And politicians shouldn't be trying to say that this is okay or things are good when you've got working people doing the best they can and still not good enough. That's not their fault. The system right now isn't working for them. And Trump, enabled by cowards like Mike Lawler, aren't making it any better.
Let's talk about one of the things he talks about, which is the big, beautiful bill, which he praises for increasing the so-called SALT, the state and local tax deduction, to $40,000 from $10,000. He said that's been a great benefit for New York 17 constituents. What's your take on the big, beautiful bill?
So starting with the SALT tax cap, I believe the cap is wrong. It should be gone entirely. Because look at back at history, and we never had a cap on state and local tax deductions until Trump and his tax bill in 2017. To punish New Yorkers, he literally put the cap in there for the first time in American history. Over a century of federal income tax never had a cap until Donald Trump. And that punishment for New Yorkers, to include families right here in the Hudson Valley, middle-class New Yorkers, was ending in 2025, going away entirely. No more SALT tax cap. But Mike Lawler, with his decisive vote on H.R. 1, the one big, beautiful or ugly bill, whatever you want to call it, I'll call it pain. His vote made the SALT tax cap permanent. And the temporary bump up from 10K to 40K, that's gone in 5 years. And Mike Lawler's off doing what he really wants to do, run for governor or Senate or whatever that is. Meanwhile, middle-class families just got a permanent tax increase courtesy of Mike Lawler. And we can't fall for the lies where he tries to misrepresent it as anything other than that.
He said, and I'm quoting now, he said that he has deep roots in the district. And he, while you, and I'm quoting, quote, parachuted in to run for Congress.
Yeah. So my family has called this district home for four generations, going back to my great grandfather who worked in the Montrose Brickyard, my mom who was born in Peekskill, my dad, born and raised in Hopewell Junction. We've called this district home for four generations. And while Mike Lawler and I are about the same age, I will tell you the last 20 years of our lives have been very, very different and show who we really are. While Mike Lawler was out there as a political consultant and operative, literally trying to profit off of democracy, I was leading America's sons and daughters in defense of democracy, going to West Point after 9/11, serving in active duty, doing multiple tours overseas. And I will tell you, here in this district, people thank me for my service. They don't fault me for it. I would love to have been in Bedford instead of Baghdad. Mike Lawler has never served this nation. And what he has done in Congress is a continuation of his efforts to profit off of his position, not serve the people. And we've seen that because when you look at Mike Lawler's voting record, since Donald Trump has taken office, he votes one way, Donald Trump's way. That's not looking out for people.
Do you, were, as you know, some left-wing Democratic socialists were elected a little bit south of you in New York City, and Republicans are trying to paint this as representative, emblematic, if you will, of the Democratic Party. And I'm sure they'll try to stick you with some of this. Is that something you have to address? Any concern?
Good luck if you're trying to say and convince people I'm a socialist, brother. But I will tell you, just like down in New York City, folks chose who they chose. Democratic voters right here in the Hudson Valley chose a proud West Point graduate, decorated Army combat veteran, and proud patriot. And I think the lesson that I am taking from this, though, and what you're seeing is what people are craving right now is someone they believe is going to fight to do the right thing, who's going to say that excuses are no longer acceptable and government's going to deliver and actually do its job. That's what I take away. And I think this is, again, a huge difference between me and Mike Lawler, where he is a professional political operative, where I've spent my life putting it on the line to protect and serve our families. And I will tell you, that type of leadership and true demonstration of public service is going to make a difference here in November.
James Carville.
Well, you know, I've heard Mike Lawler, seen him on TV a number of times, and he strikes me, and I'm certainly not a Republican. I wouldn't like him to start with, but he strikes me as a particularly odious and duplicitous guy. He loves to come across as being reasonable, when the fact he's anything but reasonable. And the big, bad, beautiful bill is just a horrible piece of legislation, isn't it?
James, I could not agree more. He will go on there and lie to our faces. He will look you in the eye and literally lie to you, telling you he's going to do one thing and instead does the exact opposite. Last year, Mike Lawler publicly said, time after time, he would never support Medicaid cuts. and then voted for H.R. 1, which is the largest cut to Medicaid in America's history. And so, to your exact point, this guy's a con artist. And what he does is he lies to put up a smokescreen, to pretend like he's a moderate, to pretend like he's bipartisan. His voting record is 100% with Donald Trump. But what's happening is the smoke is clearing. And the damage is what people are seeing and feeling every day. The damage at home, where since Mike Lawler has been elected in November of 2022, it is only harder for families here in the district to put food on the table, keep a roof over their heads, afford the electric bill, or have healthcare. And that is failure. And where I come from, when public servants fail, they're held accountable. And I will tell you, the voters in New York 17 are ready for change.
So how many debates do y'all have scheduled, you and Mr. Lawler, in this very critical election in the lower Hudson Valley?
So what we've seen in prior cycles is two or three debates in October in the lead up to Election Day. And I cannot wait to take him on. I cannot wait to hold him accountable. And I will tell you, between now and then, what we are doing every single day is getting in front of as many voters as possible, making the case that they deserve better. And I promise to follow through and be better. And so I will tell you, though, I'm very excited to spend this much time with Mike, and I'm surprised he wants to spend this much time with me, given they spent $1.5 million in tremendous effort over the last 6 months trying to avoid facing me in November. So I hope Mike and the Republicans like the smell of smoke, because they spent $1.5 million setting it on fire. And what we're going to see this November, he can't avoid me. He can't avoid accountability. It is coming.
And, you know, I think it's not a sleeper issue, but I think the issue that is going to get increasingly paid attention to is the staggering and breathtaking corruption that's taking place in Washington, primarily in the Republican Party. Has Lawler made any kind of proposal for any kind of ethics reform or asked any questions about this $2.2 billion in income, or we're just going to not talk about that for a while?
Now, Mike is mini Trump, right? We have seen this himself, where he has funneled $500,000 towards his own consulting firm from political campaigns and parties he's affiliated with. You know, he's got the nickname in the district, Limousine Lawler, because you spend hundreds of thousands of dollars on fancy hotel rooms and limousine rides and exotic stays. The reality is, this guy is a product of political corruption. He is the swamp creature. And so if he does anything, it is looking for opportunities to profit from what is presented. We've seen that in his voting record, where he has continued to support Donald Trump. We have seen this in his behavior and conduct, putting his own political ambition ahead of the people in New York 17. And so people are sick of it. He can't hide forever from his actions and the consequences of them. And again, like, people are seeing it firsthand. You know, we are dealing with the realities of his decisions every day here in the Hudson Valley, and families are sick of it. And now he is exactly the type of political swamp creature that right now has gotten us into this mess, and certainly isn't going to be part of a different way forward.
What does Mike Lawler say when somebody says, you vote for Trump all the time, or what do you think of President Trump? What kind of duplicitous, two-faced answer does he give? Because I know it's going to be duplicitous and two-faced.
Oh, we've seen it. Look, after the killings of Alex Pretty and Renee Good, you saw Mike Lawler have the audacity of trying to whitewash their murders as a bipartisan policy failure. You know, he has tried to put accountability and responsibility of the harm on anyone but himself or Trump. That's why Trump came out here just a few weeks ago to thank Mike for being such a great supporter and a great guy. And so Lawler will try to lie about being this bipartisan check on his party. His voting record says otherwise. He has backed Donald Trump 100% of the time, to include being the deciding vote on HR1. And so, again, he can't outrun that. The smoke is clearing. And while he tries to say otherwise, people here in the district are feeling it.
Is West Point in your district in the 17th?
So it is not, but it is directly across the river from Putnam County, where we can see a beautiful view. But I will tell you, the spirit of West Point is a huge part of our community. The motto of duty, honor, country, and patriotic service, and it's because service matters so much in the Hudson Valley, that's what inspired me to go to West Point after 9/11. So
And don't they teach you that, drill into your head as future officers of the United States Army to take responsibility for your actions?
They do. And they tell you to choose the harder right over the easier wrong. And there's a lot of lessons that Mike Weller could have learned if he went there. Right. But again, he and I led very different lives.
Right. I would invite him to go to West Point and spend a day and talk about individual responsibility, because he might learn something, isn't it? And he doesn't have to go very far to do it. He can just cross the river.
Well, there's an honor code there that I'm not sure he would be able to make a day without violating.
Ooh, man, I like you, lady. You come with some fans.
I'm just here to bring reality to this guy and accountability.
I just love it, Albert. I just love it. I'm going to send you a check.
let me pick up on what's, you know, one of the great moments of my life about 10 or 12 years ago, courtesy of Jack Reed, I spent 4 days at West Point, teaching, but mainly learning, spending time. It was just, I came away in awe. It really is extraordinary. But right now, this administration is imposing a lot of restrictions, their own version of woke policy. As a cybersecurity expert, you must be familiar with Jan Easterly, who they had a really distinguished professor, a West Point graduate, class of 1990, was appointed a professor, and Hegseth made them take it away. What's happening to your alma mater?
Yeah, the politicization of the military that we are seeing under Pete Hegseth and Donald Trump, enabled and allowed by a Republican-controlled Congress, is as un-American as it gets. You know, the American military is this incredible thing that transcends politics. As someone who has sworn the oath time and again and raised my hand, that is to a country, not a person or a party. And that is a huge part of what it means to live and be in America and to be an American military service member. And I still tell people, you know, when you lose faith in this country or you worry about what America is becoming, I encourage you to visit West Point. Just go and watch, and you will see cadets, these young men and women from all 50 states and territories, from families that truly span America's economic spectrum, from some of our nation's wealthiest to some of our nation's poorest. All there in uniform, swearing the same oath to defend this nation and willing to make the ultimate sacrifice for one another and the people of our country. It is beautiful.
I was so inspired. There was one semi-downer, and that is a number of those young cadets I talked to grew up with kids who went to Duke or went to Princeton, and they kind of realized that for the rest of their lives, much of their lives, they were going to live in a separate community, that's what the all-volunteer Army has done. And I think, you know, they're proud of what they're going to do. They're proud of what they're doing. They're proud of being at West Point. But I think that bothered them.
I will tell you that the family that I have built over my years of service, you know, these are incredible men and women from all over the country, all sorts of political backdrops, political backgrounds. And it never mattered when you were out there, right? And that is the most incredible part of this, is no one cared your political affiliation when you were out there getting the mission done, because the only thing that mattered was the mission and the safety and security of one another and your service to this country. And in that way, again, like, the American military is this beautiful thing that transcends so much of the partisanship and dysfunction that we're seeing play out. But what worries me is when you have incompetent people like Pete Hegseth in the office he is in, doing the harm he is doing, where he is making America less safe, not more safe. And that is unacceptable. You're watching as he has forced the resignations or terminated these incredible leaders with decades of experience and combat tours that exceed his years in service, right? And instead of honoring that and respecting that, he has had his own ideological agenda that he has been enacting, where he has fired some of our nation's best leaders, and America deserves better. The American people deserve better. And that is unacceptable. The Senate should never have confirmed him. It goes back to dereliction of duty that we have seen in these elected representatives who have put their own political agenda before the American people.
Let me ask you just a couple quick policy questions. You are a highly decorated combat veteran, uniquely qualified to discuss war and combat operations. Assess Americans' current policy on the Iran war and what you would advise us to do right now.
You know, as someone who has been to war multiple times in the Middle East, I will tell you that, you know, the last thing I want to see is us getting America's sons and daughters into yet another forever war where we see this administration getting us into this conflict 4 months ago without a clear military objective or strategy, without an articulated exit strategy, without our allies behind us to support this endeavor, without making the case to the American people, and without seeking authorization of the use of military force from Congress. And I say this as someone who's a firm believer we cannot let Iran get a nuclear weapon. As the largest provider of lethal aid to terror groups, we cannot let that happen. And I spoke out in support of the strikes that were conducted last year against the Iranian nuclear weapons development facilities. But this conflict is reckless and haphazard. And we have to be careful to not mistake the tactical successes we're seeing of our military with these short-term objectives with strategic success. And right now, what we see is Iran controls the Strait of Hormuz, and that did not exist before. We're seeing terms of a negotiation for nuclear development requirements that are going to be worse than the JCPOA. That's failure. That's not success. And that's the administration's fault, not our military.
One final question. I'll turn it back to James. There is a large Jewish population in your district. See, I think this is a correct summary of your position on Israel. And tell me if so, and if I'm wrong, that you support a Jewish state, oppose, however, many of Prime Minister Netanyahu's policies, favor a Palestinian, a two-state solution, but are reluctant to condition military aid to Israel. Is that a fair summation of your position?
Yeah, that is a fair representation. I think going back to, look, I don't want to see anyone's sons and daughters go into conflict or endless war. When you've been there, you don't want to see it have to happen for anyone. And I do believe we have to focus on how do we get to an enduring ceasefire where the violence and conflict and the cycle of it stops. I do believe a two-state solution is a necessary outcome of this, and that there should be equal security, support, and sovereignty for both sides. And I do believe America has a responsibility to Israel, to the Jewish people, to ensure their safety and security. And they have been a critical partner in American national security. But I do believe they should be held to the same standards as any other ally in terms of receiving foreign military assistance. And I do believe that just like I am pro-America, I love this country more than anything. And I can criticize the Trump administration. I can support Israel, the people of Israel, and criticize the Netanyahu administration decisions that have been made. That's what democracies do.
James Carville.
So I followed this Hedgesmith and General Dan Cain, and I looked this guy up. He might be the most outstanding soldier of the 21st century. I mean, he seemed like to be a highly confident person.
James, let me interrupt. I don't think you're talking about Dan Cain. I think you're talking about, is it General Cooper, the one he just fired?
Or General Donahue.
General Donahue.
Thank God we have Kate Conley here to correct these old codgers.
I stand corrected. It was General Donahue. And I looked the guy up at his record, and he might be one of the most outstanding soldiers of the 21st century. Is there some concern within the Army that chasing all of the really top talent out of the Army right now, which seems to be a particularly bad idea?
It is incredibly disconcerting to see how Hegseth is gutting the American military of our best leaders. I will tell you, I had the tremendous privilege of serving under General Donahue during my career. He was the best officer, the best leader, the best commander that I've ever had. And we saw what a critical role he played in support to the Ukrainian military in its counter to the Russian invasion and offensive. We have seen his leadership help modernize and advance our military tactical abilities and really, again, modernize how we're bringing technology into the fight. This is the type of visionary leader that you wish you had 30 of, 300 of. And instead of honoring that and understanding the importance of leaders like General Donahue to this country, you see Pete Hegseth chasing him out. You know, Pete Hegseth doesn't hold a candle to the capabilities and competence of General Donahue. And it is insulting to watch someone so incompetent get rid of America's best leaders. And it makes me sad. Like, our service members deserve better. They deserve leaders like General Donahue. America deserves leaders like General Donahue. And so I do think that Pete Hegseth's legacy is going to be one of harm to American national security, given the recklessness and bias of his decisions.
So every military person, or particularly officer, people know that training is essential to everything. The better you train and the more you train, the better you fight, the better you know. And this strikes me is they have these ICE agents and they get these people and they barely train them and they give them a gun and a badge. And well, this is exactly where you go. You don't make a policeman or a soldier by calling somebody a policeman or a soldier. It's actually a very complicated and lengthy process, not just to be an officer, but to be a private in the Marine Corps. You spend 10, 11 weeks in training before you even do that, and you spend another month in infantry training. I don't think this administration understands how important it is to screen and train when you have agencies like this. And I just hope that we're able to talk about that more.
I started my military career as a military police officer. So when we weren't downrange or training to go on deployments, we were conducting domestic law enforcement. And I can tell you that what we are seeing, this is not about law enforcement or immigration enforcement. These individuals are trying to stoke terror into the American people. And I have to tell you, the outrage and heartbreak I felt in January when we watched as federal agents wearing the same combat gear that I wore in combat zones, standing on American streets, assaulting and killing the very people they were sworn to serve and protect. And this administration, instead of calling for accountability and transparency in investigations, tried to lie and cover it up. That's not leadership. This type of weaponization of the executive branch and tolerated abuse of power has to be rooted out. This is not a Democratic or Republican issue. This is an American issue. This is about the federal government protecting and serving the American people. And I say this as someone who believes in border security. I do believe that ICE should be focused on getting drug cartels and human traffickers and terrorists and violent criminals out of this country. But what we're seeing, the murdering of people, unarmed people, innocent people on American streets, that's not what anyone wants.
Well, thank you very much. I was prepared to be impressed. I wasn't impressed. I was overwhelmed. I really, really wish you the best. And I think that you have a lot to bring. Albert?
Kate Conley, our build-up understated the case, but thank you. You've been a terrific guest. Thank you so much, and I hope we can visit again.
No, thank you for having me. I'm doing this out of love for country and the belief that our best days are still ahead of us.
Our favorite saying in the entire world, soldier on.
That's it.
That's it.
All right, now for the outrage of the week. You know, Donald Trump will predictably go on a rant Thursday night about widespread election fraud, that's a lie, and probably make-up charges of foreign interference. He now has enlisted in the White House John Solomon, once, you know, a decent journalist who turned into a right-wing conspiracy nut, who even Fox News has raised questions about his credibility. Solomon, you rest assured, is going to find terrible damage is being done or threatened to be done to Donald Trump. This follows the Trump Justice Department enlisting Rudy Giuliani, whose once high reputation was demolished in a lawsuit after his terrible behavior in the 2020 post-election. And now he's involved in his efforts to go after former CIA Director John Brennan. You know, I don't know if we call this a clown show or a sleaze show, but God, they must miss Gordon Liddy of Watergate infamy.
The one thing about the people around Nixon and Ehrlichman and Haldeman and most of them I mean, they were bad people. They went to jail. They got in a lot of trouble. They were not buffoons. All right. The people around Trump, or at least the people around Trump that Trump listens to, like Pete Hegseth or Bobby Kennedy, they're buffoons. They're just total, total buffoons. And that's what Trump, you know, demands, because buffoons like to be around other buffoons. And none of this is at all surprising, I don't think. And I don't think you're surprised either.
No, I'm not. And the idea with a war in Iran and a huge cost of living issue in America and a corrupt Justice Department, he's going to go on television to talk about non-existent election fraud. Anyway, it's who he is.
So my outrage is this, is the people that are still for Trump. Okay, half the country voted for him on Election Day 2024. I hear all kinds of justification. Actually, some of it, you know, I didn't have Harris wasn't for change. I thought I had some better memories of the economy in the first term. You know, I don't know. I mean, I certainly disagreed with it. But I think there are actually some well-meaning, smart people that actually voted for Trump in November 2024. If you're still for Trump, you are a world-class buffoon. And everything that he told you he cared about is going to do, he's done none of it. He didn't focus on American people, didn't focus on anything. The only thing this man is focused on is making money. And is this not the outrage of the week? It's the outrage of this century that, A, he's there in 36%. The American public approves the jobs he's doing. It's not beyond me how you ended up voting for Trump in 2024. Profoundly disagree with it, but people make decisions that I disagree with all the time. If you're still for him, you yourself are outraged. You got to reexamine your life because there's something wrong with it.
And now for our listener questions, a section that we always love. And the very first one is from our old friend, John in Gurnee, Illinois. James, we've made a commitment. We're going to go to Gurnee. We're coming to Gurnee. We got to find out where it is. But once we do, we're going to be there, John.
Okay,
we're going to buy you a meal. John, no one's a more loyal listener and asks better questions than John. He says, polling shows MAGA is very unpopular. But what's surprising is how unpopular Democrats are. With all the good that they try to do, the middle class and the poor, what one issue do you think drives the popularity of the Democrats down? All right, he understands why MAGA's unpopular. Why are the Democrats unpopular? What's driving their popularity down?
What's driving the Democrats' popularity down, in my opinion, is we lost the election. So people are not, if they're members of the political party to win an election. When you lose an election, they get mad at you. If we win the election in November, I think you'll see the Democratic number rise up. Most of the deterioration in the image of the Democratic Party comes from other Democrats. So you pay an enormous price when your party loses an election. Now, I don't think we're going to lose one in November. I keep asking for people why I want people to tell me why I shouldn't be as optimistic as I am, and no one has been able to tell me. Well, it's just, maybe we'll screw it up, but I don't see anything that doesn't tell me that not only are we going to win the House comfortably, I think we're going to win the Senate, and I don't think it's going to be that close. And I don't see anything that indicates anything otherwise. I mean, we could have a disaster in Michigan, but all right, that's possible. I'll admit that. I think the main bullet has essentially been dodged. And I look at turnout, I look at special elections, I look at data, and the going is, well, the congressional generic is not as wide as you would think it is. Let's just say that it's average plus five Democratic for the sake of that. That the Republicans never break 43 in their vote. And I just, could I be dead wrong? Of course, anybody can be dead wrong in anything. But I don't see one indication that tells me this is not going to be a monster Democratic year. Not a single one.
Yeah, I think it's going to be big. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Susan in Surf City, New Jersey says, do you think Andy Beshear should take steps to call a special election because of Mitch McConnell's absences from the Senate? Susan, this is complicated. As of right now, Andy Beshear has no role in a senator and picking a new senator should Mitch McConnell leave. As I understand the law, if McConnell were to leave the Senate before, I think it's September 8th, a new election would have to be called, I think, within a matter of, 8 weeks or something like that. If he were to leave the Senate after September 8th, then the seat just remains vacant until the next Congress. Now, Beshear, this was a law foisted upon Beshear by the overwhelmingly Republican Kentucky legislature. He, if there is a vacancy, he may challenge that law. But it is a very complicated situation right now. I would guess the odds of Kentucky having a new senator this year is that they're unlikely.
Yeah, but the law is a little bit complicated, but we can't hold a special election. He's still living. He is the United States Senator of Kentucky. I know you remember this. This is how old we are. I remember when Quentin Burdick was a senator from North Dakota. I think he was incapacitated for months and months, maybe a year. And a guy named David Strauss was effectively the head of the huge committee that Quentin Burdick ran, of like Public Works Committee or one of these kinds of things. I don't know what people are talking about. The United States Senator from Kentucky right now is Mitch McConnell. It's that simple. And the only way he's not going to be is his term gets up or he resigns. Or he dies. All right. Yeah.
One of the real, they put out a picture on a couple of days ago of Senator McConnell and his wife in the hospital. He had the Sunday Washington Post on his lap. So it was bona fide. But Ron Johnson, that nutbag from Wisconsin, said he thought it was an AI-generated photo. Oh. I mean, it's just, God, how do they find these people?
Let me be clear. I don't want anybody to get sick. Okay, I just don't. Not Lindsey Graham, not Mitch McConnell.
Right.
Not even Donald Trump. Okay, we've just been slinging around. And I mean, I like hardball politics. I like body slam and everything. But it just fascination and glee in other people's health issues is just something I don't want to be part of. I just don't want to be part of it.
Amen. Amen. I totally agree. James, you'll remember about 2 months ago, speaking of South Carolina, we had on Annie Andrews, who is the Democratic candidate for the Senate in South Carolina, a seat that Lindsey Graham was going to run for, and now Republicans are trying to replace. Joseph in Schenectady, New York, asked you, what, if any, changes to campaign strategy should Dr. Andrews make now?
Well, first of all, her record speaks for itself. I think the closing of rural hospitals is really critical. And I think the Democrats need to penetrate, small town and rural America better. I think the urban issues that we typically talk about, I'm sure she'll do fine in Charleston for the most part. I'm sure she'll do fine in Columbia for the most part. But I hope that Dr. Andrews takes the message to small town and rural South Carolina. And I think that these healthcare cuts have really hurt this kind of thing. And, obviously she can run on any number of different issues. You know, for whatever it's worth, she's not very far behind in the polling. And, Trump is getting increasingly unpopular. I think she's got a shot. I really do.
Well, one of our great friends, Joe Abramson's daughter, the great doctor, Cornelia Grigg, she really is one of the great doctors, says that she's a friend and she says, Annie Andrews is fabulous. So if Cornelia says that, then she must be.
Yeah, well, Cornelia's a Harvard-trained pediatric heart surgeon, so she knows pediatrics, to say the least.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
I think she that comes with a stunningly important validation, if you will. And not only is she going to be a great candidate, but she's a great humane physician also.
Yeah, absolutely. John in Chicago says, Bernie Sanders backed Graham Plattner. With Plattner collapsing, how does that diminish Bernie's credibility? I don't think it makes any difference. I mean, Bernie is sui generis. I don't agree with many of Bernie's policies, but he's a force, and he is a relentless force. And I think some of the candidates he endorses probably are not the ones that would be best suited to win a general election. But I don't think Bernie's going to be hurt because because one candidate lost in the state of Maine.
So I listened to a show on the satellite radio, political channel, McConnell. You see him on Saturday morning. And I don't want to get into an editorial comment, but he had Mark Halpin up. And Mark Halpin says if Bernie runs, he would be the Democratic nominee in 2028. That's insane. That's totally insane. Bernie's going to be 86 years old in 2028. And he went as far as to say he would have to pick a really young vice presidential candidate. It was going through this complicated thing of how the Democratic nomination is Bernie Sanders sort of asking. I don't want to dig up anything, but that's one of the dumbest fucking statements I've ever heard on American politics.
Well, I know a little bit about Mark Halpern, and he has turned into a Trump loyalist now. And I didn't find him reliable before. I find him even less reliable now. He's got a checkered past, and so therefore saying something like that doesn't really surprise me.
I knew him well enough to get it whatever bark further. But he's never struck me as a guy that's fundamentally stupid. This is a fundamentally stupid statement.
Yeah, well, he may have acquired that.
I don't know.
The next question is from Chris in Ellicott City, Maryland, who says, for years, politicians have ignored the fact that the debt to GOP ratio, I'm sorry, the debt to GDP ratio can't continue to rise indefinitely. Chris thinks this should be a major topic of conversation, but nobody's talking about it. James, you've talked about it some. What do you think?
Bart, what do I think? There was a big debate in early Obama years. A Harvard economist named Ken Rogoff, and it was a high-level woman economist, I can't think of her name, and that said if the debt-to-GDP ratio approached 90%, it would be devastating the United States. And there was a lot of pushback on this, because we were just coming out of the recession. And that turned out to not be the case. And the people who pushed back on it turned out to be way more correct than the deficit hawks at the time. I think it's like 120 to 125% of GDP. And we should get somebody that understands economics, but I don't see how this, we're now hitting $1 trillion on debt service. I don't know. The interest rates still they would say, well, the Cassandras are saying, we're still borrowing, although 10-year treasury yield is rising. It's still relatively cheap, but I cannot imagine that this is not going to cause severe consequences going forward in American fiscal policy. I just can't imagine it.
I'm afraid you're right. I really am afraid you're right.
Everybody's going to come back, and it probably will manifest itself in the bond market because everything does. And everybody's going to say, where were we? We were asleep at the switch. You were. We are asleep at the switch. And we don't even talk about it anymore. We don't even talk about it. And, I still say the best solution is the Bernie Marino Elizabeth Warren's solution, bust a cap on the Social Security tax. So it gives you $3 trillion. That'll help a lot.
Yeah. Greg in West Hartford, Connecticut. This is a good question. Says the conventional wisdom, all of our questions are good, by the way, but he says the conventional wisdom is a new president should embody those characteristics that are antithetical, that are antidote to the president's worst flaws, in this case, Trump. So that would call for, he asked, a calm, decent, and steady as she goes. However, I wonder if the current political climate, a slasher like Gavin Newsom, would serve the party's interests better. Fight fire with fire. You know, that's really a good question, Greg, because I think what the left wing has claimed is that we're fighters and the others are accommodators. And I think you do need a fighter, both in 2026 and 2028. And I'll give you two models to look at. One is John Ossoff in Georgia, and the other is a guest on the program this week, Kate Conley in the New York 17. They both are moderate progressives. Conley actually beat a much more liberal candidate in the primary. And they both, I think, have what I would term moderate mainstream progressive views, and they both are tough, and they both are fighters. And I think someone that's not a fighter and this year and in 2028 is not going to be what the Democratic Party voters want.
So I guess what I'd say is we need an effective fighter. Just start out and screaming at the bike or pounding the table or describing yourself as the most anti-Trump human being that ever lived. I mean, that's great. But what we should be doing is rewarding people that have, you know, smart ideas on how to deal with this, and most importantly, smart ideas on how to win the election. And I agree. I don't think that the Democrats are going to dominate the biggest table pounder in 2028, or remains to be seen. And in terms of the direction of the country in the Democratic Party, the 28 nominating process for Democrats is going to be as critical. And we always say, this is the critical election. This is the one. I think the next one is going to determine a lot about the future of the Democratic Party and a lot about the future of the United States.
I absolutely agree. And I would add, I think this may be the most important midterm that I can remember, really, since 1974. So, does November 3 matter a lot?
The stakes here are just beyond, and let's be honest, but the United States has had a bad 21st century. We just did. We ended the 20th century as high as any country could be in 2,000 years, and look where we are now. And
I think the last part of it, I think the first part of it actually, for the most part,
the
was
recession,
okay.
But, and the Iraq War and all of that, no, I don't think so. The Supreme Court appointments.
But I think after that, yeah, I think that Elena Kagan was a great appointment. I think Sonia Sotomayor was a great appointment. I think I guess it's more mixed, but I certainly agree with you on where it stands right now today. Our final question, Kay, I'm going to give you a break on this. I shouldn't. Kay, who says she's from Texas. That's a big state, Kay. It's a huge difference whether you're from Lubbock or whether you're from Dallas or whether you're from the Valley. So next time, Kay, tell us where you're from. She says, I own a home in rural Texas. That's a hint, at least. And one thing noticeable is that Trump flags and signs are few and far between. Don't get me wrong. I don't think these people are going to turn blue, but could this indicate lower turnout and less enthusiasm in the midterms?
I really agree with Kate. And I think anecdotal evidence, when it piles up, you just can't discard it. And I have a little bit of the same experience she does. I'm currently in South Mississippi. And if I went to the Walmart a year ago, it would pretty common that one or two people would come up to me and say, hey, man, I love my guy Trump. Why don't you get behind him? Or something like that. Not overly threatening or rude. I never hear that anymore. I never see that. And you used to see like Trump merch stands on Highway 90, or you would see them go right around downtown, pick up trucks and Trump flags and everything. I haven't seen that in since the year turned. And I think what you're seeing is indicative of something. Look, are these people going to miraculously turn into Democrats overnight? No. But are they going to really run up the margin in rural Texas as they've done previously? No, I don't think so. That's why I'm pretty encouraged by it. And I do think visibility does matter. And if you observe it over a length of time and it continues in one direction, I think it's saying something. And I think our friend in Texas is picking up on something smart.
Okay, great question. Just next time to where you're from. We love those questions. If we didn't get to yours this week, please send it in again next week because we'll try to get to it. There are so many good questions out there that picking the whatever is 7 or 8 best is really, really hard. So send them in again, and thank you. Hey, thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Superpower, 3-Day Blinds, Smalls, and Mint Mobile, and our episode show notes. We thank you for supporting them because when you do, it really helps make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. And check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go take a look. You also can find other shows you might enjoy in the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. Now remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with another show as we continue our War Room planning.